Good morning. This is Jump in Tucson on a good Monday morning. This is our Wonder Series where we talk about the wonderful things happening at the University of Arizona, including student projects, student learning, student outcomes, as well as top-level performances by artists and athletes, and especially research going on with faculty and scientists at the University of Arizona. So our guest this morning is Vicki Westover. Good morning, Vicki.
Good morning, Ed. So nice to see you again.
Yeah. Well, we go way back. Mm-hmm. We go way back. You and I had a time together. My very first job at the University of Arizona back now some 36, 37 years ago was to teach a class in the Media Arts Department, it was called at the time, at the University of Arizona, Creative Advertising. And then a couple of years after I started that, I went over to the Elder College. But that's kind of where I met you. Well, not too long after that, you and I taught some classes together at the University of Arizona, what is now called the Theater, Film, and Television Department.
Right. Yeah. The School of Theater, Film, and Television. Yeah.
And then you got involved in the Hanson Institute.
Yeah, I was the director of the Hanson Film TV Institute at the time, and I was asked to teach professional practices.
Right.
Because there were so many you had a section and I had a section.
Right. And that was where we took kids through all sorts of things, like how to write a good resume for, you know, specifically for the film industry, and how to do internships in Southern California at film houses and so forth and other places around the country.
Right. Preparing them for a career and trying to help them figure out what lane they wanted to go in.
And that was fun. And then you administered the Hanson Benevolent philanthropic fund to help people with films and to advance film in the Southern Arizona area, around the world, actually. So we have a long history with the University of Arizona. Mm-hmm. It's been great. During that time, before then and for a long time, you have been involved in the independent film industry. And tell us a little bit about your history of helping, you know, independent filmmakers get their films to market and get them to showings and get people to see their films. It's been a long journey for you, hasn't it?
I have been a film programmer for over 30 years, and I started that work back east in Baltimore, Maryland, where I worked closely with the Maryland Film Commission and ran numerous film festivals and ran an organization called the Baltimore Film Forum, which showcased, you know, the best in classic and contemporary cinema at the time. And then when I moved to Tucson, I was lucky to get that job at the Hanson Film Institute.
Right. Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about some of those, you know, I was looking at your IMDb and looking at some of the listing of some of those independent films that you have assisted on, either as a producer or as whatever role you had in that. Some of those that kind of stand out to you over the years, dating back now, possibly 25, 30 years.
So. Yeah. Yeah, I've been producing for a while, and you know, when I was a film programmer, people would say, oh, you should be a producer. So this was like, you know, the 80s and 90s, and I was like, okay, but I didn't know what that meant. I don't think people really know.
So what is the difference between a programmer? So like when you were with Maryland or when you came out here, when you program, say, a film festival, what is the difference between that and being a producer of an independent film?
Yeah, well, so when you're a film programmer, you are selecting the films, you're finding the films, you know, curating them, and sharing them, and so you know, exhibiting them in the best possible way,
bringing the directors and producers
exactly.
in to do seminars and to talk
exactly.
before the film premieres and those kind of
right.
things.
Right, developing the audience for that, and you know, and every programmer has their own sort of goals. And I started at a time when most of the independent work that was being shown was just made by, let's be honest, white men.
Right.
And so I really sort of scoured to find work by women and people of color, and I would bring in work from Africa, you know, and this was work that
Mexico,
was not,
yeah.
This was work that was not available to be seen, because when I started programming, there was no Blockbuster, there was no, you know, cable TV, there was no streaming, and if you wanted to see an independent film, you had to go to a place that was showing it, a screen, you know, in my early programming days, I would literally telegram Hong Kong to bring in a film, and they, we'd fly it in. You know, it was
right.
very different than it is now.
They'd fly in the actual film canister.
They'd fly in the actual film canisters. Yeah, we had to get it through customs and everything. So it was very complicated back then. It's a lot easier now.
Right.
You can watch a link on your computer, a screener link. And
heck,
know.
Even on your phone now, you can probably watch an independent movie.
So it's a little bit easier to be a programmer. Now you have access to a lot of work from all over the world. It's not so, you don't have to play detective quite as much. But yeah, so I program I've been programming for over 20 years Mexican cinema in Tucson. But so a producer actually is someone who help who makes gets the film made. Mm-hmm. So often from start to finish. So the producer's involved in the development of it from the very beginning all the way into the marketing, the distribution and marketing. It's a huge job.
Does the producer have anything to do with the plot line or the storyline, or is that mostly left to the directors and writers, or do you have the producer, can they be involved in that strategic vision?
Yeah, they can. They can be, you know, a creative producer that really has something to say about the development of the script and the casting and everything. So it really varies and it depends. And sort of what a producer does in Hollywood and what a producer does on TV and what a producer does for independent films, it's all really very different. But generally speaking, you know, and then there's like executive producers, producers, co-producers, associate producers, you know, they all have a very right. distinct role, but the producer really is
and
the
some
person.
And some of those Hollywood films and so forth, with all due respect, the producer is providing the money or getting the money to make it happen, and they're
exactly.
not doing much else.
Exactly.
And whereas in your role as an independent producer, you're doing much of the lion's share of the work, right?
A lot of work, and it's invisible work, really, because
right.
once the film goes on the screen, it's really the director who gets, you yeah. know, the glory and the credit.
But, right, as it should be, I guess.
Yeah. Sure.
Because they have the vision, or not
yes.
not necessarily, because the director doesn't necessarily have to be the writer of the film. It could be that the writer.
Right. And it really is the producer's role to support the vision of and goals of the director and make that happen. So
right.
I did that for many years.
Do any of the films that you've worked on stand out to you? Other than we're going to talk about one that you've done, but are we going to talk, is there any that one of them that stands out, The Wall, Almost an Island, or any of those that stand out that are just like, wow, that was a really great film?
Well, you know, I guess I'd have to say the very first documentary I produced, because prior to doing documentaries, I was doing short narrative films.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was asked to produce this documentary called Apache 8 about an all-women's wildland firefighting crew from the White Mountain Apache Reservation.
Oh, cool.
And that was being made for public television. And, you know, that came out in 2011, and that film is still going strong. It's really very beloved. It's screened well over 2,000 times on public television all around the United States. And that was the first documentary where I really had to learn. It was really learn
on the job, right?
On the job. It was, yeah, very, very challenging. And so I'll always remember that, because then that sort of set me on a path of producing documentary films, and in many cases, documentary films with indigenous content.
Yeah.
And I'm not indigenous, so it's been a pleasure to be sort of invited into that,
right.
into that world, and be sort of allowed to produce those films.
So when we come back, we'll talk about your film and about mm-hmm. what's coming up in a couple of weeks here, the premiere of your film, and we'll talk a little bit about how that all came about. We're talking with Vicki Westover. She's an independent film producer and now director and movie maker herself, and we'll be back in just a minute. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Series on KVOI. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. This is our Wonder Series from the University of Arizona, where we talk about the great things going on with the faculty, the students, the community, and how the U of A does good things in our community. Our guest this morning is Vicki Westover, who Vicki and I met some time ago while we were both at the University of Arizona. As a matter of fact, the movie we're going to talk about now, you kind of started when you were at the University of Arizona, a labor of love over many years, right, Vicki?
I did, yes. It was, you know, basically over 6 years in process.
That's great. And so the movie is called Final Vows, a film by Vicki Westover. The description is 4 years with a cloistered order of nuns in the high desert of Arizona. It premieres this Sunday, coming up Sunday, September 8th, at the Fox Tucson Theater on Congress Street. So this is a great premiere for you. It's your own personal movie. So tell us a little bit about the movie and how it came about.
Yeah, it's my directorial debut at the age of 65. So, I had been producing other people's films for a while and programming for many years, so showing the work of other filmmakers. And I think I really longed to get back to my own creative work. I had been a photographer for many years, but no one in Tucson kind of knew that. And so one day I decided, you know, I wanted to make a film. And so it came to me that I would make a film documentary about nuns, which seems like an odd choice for me. And my friends thought it was a bit odd because I'm not religious. But I was raised Catholic and was educated by nuns from first through 12th grade. I don't practice Catholicism now, but I think I always had a fascination with nuns and a confusion about them. and certainly lots of encounters with them, not all positive, like I think many people. But I was a teenager in the 70s, and Gloria Steinem was telling me I could be anything I wanted to be. And there was a woman in our class who wanted to, a young woman who wanted to become a nun, and I just didn't understand it. And so I think it was something that must have been in the back of my mind for many years. So I blurted that out and then decided, okay, I said it, now I have to do it. So it took a while to research, to find the right place and the right story. And, you know, I could talk a lot about that, like how it sort of came about. But so we started working down at Santa Rita Abbey. And that was really a very rare situation because they're cloistered. So they don't, you know, they don't have people coming into the Abbey, and they certainly don't, you know, feature themselves in movies. Now, I just want to point out that this is an entirely independent film. It was not commissioned by the church or anybody. Nobody in the team is a practicing Catholic. It's truly an independent film. And so they took a real leap of faith, pun intended.
Okay, I like that. To
let us do this. And it did take a while, really, to develop a relationship of trust. I would say we probably were filming for a couple of years before things really started to feel like we had a trusting relationship with the sisters.
Can you tell us a little bit about Sister Victoria Murray and Sister Pamela Fletcher and how awesome they are?
They are amazing women. And, you know, I started the project not having much respect for you know, just really questioning why someone would become a nun. And I guess honestly I could say I didn't have much respect for the choice, and I left the project really having a deep respect for women who choose that for themselves.
They would say that they were chosen for that, not that they chose for
that's
themselves.
Exactly what they say, yeah. So Sister Vicky is really incredible because she decided to become a nun at a very young age. At 25, she joined and was sent to the Abbey just as it was starting here in Sonoyta in the high desert, and it was really very rough living at the beginning there. You know, they didn't have what they have now. They just had one little building. And and she's been there ever since. She's been there for 50 years.
Wow.
And she's just so full of joy at her choice and her vocation. So she's definitely a main, you know, we used to say character for documentary, and now it's sort of not very PC to say someone's a character. You say they're a participant, and she really was a participant. But anyway, she's one of the main participants in the film. And then Sister Pam is also a main participant. And so what's going to be fun about the screening on September 8th, which is at 2 p.m. at the Fox, is that Sister Vicky and Sister Pam will be with us for the Q&A afterwards, because I suspect that when people have watched the film that they're going to have more questions for Sister Vicky and Sister Pam than they will for me.
Right.
So, but I just thought that would really enrich the conversation and the Q&A for the audience if they had, you know, other questions they wanted to ask the sisters, they could.
How long is the film?
It's 84 minutes.
So you filmed a lot to get 84 minutes. You filmed, obviously, for 6 years you were working on the project. So for a couple of years you gathered film footage, and then obviously getting into the editing booth and figuring out what you're going to put together to make it all come together.
Right. We filmed for many months. We researched, and then we filmed for 4.5 years, and then it took a long time to edit. And now, you know, there's so much work now in terms of marketing and distribution. So, I mean, the work is going to go on solidly for at least a couple of years.
Yeah. So as you premiere it here, but it'll go on to other film festivals throughout the country, and you're entering it as many places as you possibly can, probably, right?
Well, it had its premiere at the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival, which is a wonderful documentary film festival. And then I was so fortunate that it was around the same time, actually. It was picked up by First Run Features, which is a very old and reputable independent film distributor in New York. You know, who distributes some of the greatest American independent filmmakers like Spike Lee. So I'm just so proud to be.
And then you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's like a little on me. But so I'm such so proud to be in with that distributor. And so it's just now going out. You know, I don't have any delusions about the film. You know, I don't think it's like a theatrical film. It's mostly, I think, going to play at community venues and college and university campuses. So we're sort of promoting it heavily to women's studies programs, anthropology, sociology, even gerontology, because it's a lot. It's really kind of a meditation on aging as well, mm-hmm. the film.
Especially with her 50 years, yeah. So, you know, this is kind of a mercenary kind of a question, but, you know, it takes money to put these things together. One, how do you get the money to produce an independent film like this? And then do you monetize it? Can you make anything from it, or is it just a labor of love?
Well, it's a labor of love. I'm kind of in debt right now. But anyway, yeah. No, it's so challenging to make an independent film. But I was lucky. I had a wealthy friend who believed in my vision and passion to make this and wanted to support me in my directorial debut. So she gave me some money that started off the project. And that carried us for a while. And then, you know, this was a, you know, I write a lot of grants, and I write grants for other filmmakers, mm-hmm. And have won grants for them for their projects. I knew, having been in the sort of that business for a long time, that this was not a film that was going to be competitive in the documentary grant funding world. Right now, what they're looking for are stories. They're basically funding filmmakers of color and filmmakers from other parts of the world, like Africa, and the stories that they're looking for are LGBTQ stories, very different kinds of things. And I just knew that...
A traditional Catholic nuns thing probably doesn't fit with that.
No, yeah. I just knew it wasn't. So I didn't actually waste too much time. I tried a few, and it just wasn't worth it. But I then, you know, we were basically stuck for a while because we didn't have any money to keep going for production. And it was just one of those serendipitous things. I ended up getting from a non-traditional film funder. I got money from the Conrad N. Hilton Foundation.
Wow.
As in Hilton Hotels. And that's a kind of a convoluted story how that happened. But that's basically who ended up funding the film for production and post.
Right. And as you say, Vicki Westover doesn't make a lot of money off of this. Matter of fact, you spend more than you make. It's kind of like being an elementary school teacher. You end up getting a salary, but you just put it all back into the classroom. So
exactly.
As an independent producer, you are pretty much funding this with family, friends, and all anything you can, the tin cup that you can fill as you go around talking
exactly.
to people. Which means that if someone would like to help you in the future for things, you're certainly open to that kind of opportunity.
They can. We actually do have a fiscal sponsor, Film Forum in New York, and so people can make charitable donations to the film if they want to write it off as a tax deduction. So,
yeah.
We joke. We had such a great time making the film. I mean, it really was just a crew of three.
Right.
Me, the cinematographer, and the sound person, and then I have two producers, and one or two would come down occasionally for the shoots. But you know, one. We joked that we had such a good time that we want to go back and make a sequel, Return to the Abbey. So if anybody, after they see the film, they want to fund, the sequel, you know, we'll be happy to take it.
And we're going to take votes on what that what the title of that Final Vows sequel is going to be. Well, the film is called Final Vows. It's a film by Victoria Westover in her directorial debut. Okay, got it. Took me a while to say that. It's the Arizona premiere. It'll be Sunday, September 8th at 2 o'clock at the Fox Theater. It'll be a $10 ticket at the door. And if people wanted to find out a little bit more about Vicki Westover and find out about the movie, where would they go?
There is a website for the film, finalvowsfilm.com. And there's profiles of you know, the cinematographer. I really have to give a shout out to the cinematographer. The film is so beautifully shot, and I just could not have imagined making this film with any other cinematographer. Jonathan von Ballenberg does a lot of wildlife cinematography, and that was just the perfect fit for this film because so much of the film I wanted to include the landscape and the animals and everything that means so much to the nuns that they live literally in the midst of that. So it's so beautifully shot, and you know, every filmmaker, independent filmmaker, longs to have their film shown on a big screen with really good projection and sound to a diverse audience. So I did a tech check, and it looks gorgeous at the Fox.
Fantastic. Well, we look forward to seeing the movie. We appreciate everything you do for the community, Vicki, and what you've done for students at the University of Arizona over the last a couple of decades that you and I together down there doing our thing. And we look forward to seeing Final Vows at the Fox Theater on September 8th. You're listening to Jump in Tucson, the Wonder Edition, where we talk about the good things going on at the University of Arizona. And we'll be back after the break. You are listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk station. Thanks for jumping in. We'll be back after the break. Thank you, Vicki.
Thank you, Ed.
Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Ed Ackerley, your host for the Wonder Series, which is a great tribute to the good things going on at the University of Arizona, including research and students doing great things in the classroom and in presentations and on the athletic field and all over the university. And it's just a tribute to the good things happening at the University of Arizona. And one of those good things that has happened at the University of Arizona over the years is the good friends that I have been able to make. And one of those people is Peggy Johnson, who I met when she was a political reporter at KUAT back in the day, just 5 or 6 years ago. It wasn't that long ago, Peggy. So welcome to Jump in Tucson, Peggy.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
Well, Peggy, you and I go back. You worked at KUAT, the television station that is part of the Arizona Public Media now, and a long, long life. And you were doing actual, back in the day when there were actual political reporters on the stations, and you went and followed politics, and I got to know you then. So that was just a few years ago, right? That has been a while since you've done that. Yeah.
It's been a while. Yeah. It's been, but it was a lot. It was 24 years. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you and I got to work together when I was one of the chairmen of the Media Arts Media Arts Advisory Committee back when the School of Theater, Film, and Television was called Media Arts. So you and I were on that board together and doing wonderful things. And then, you know, you've done a lot of things in the community that have to do with film and advancing film and art. So tell us a little bit about your journey of how you took your love for film and moved that into the purchase of the Loft Cinema. And now, you know, some two and a half decades later, you're still going strong.
Yeah, I you know, because I worked at the university, I could take classes relatively inexpensively. And so I decided to get a master's degree, I think starting in 98. And I struggled with what I wanted to study because I was, you know, I thought political science or journalism, but I really decided what I really was interested in learning was film. So I got a master's in media arts and sort of it was the emphasis was film theory back then. And the first thing the guy told me, that he wasn't there when somebody who's not there anymore. Right. First thing he said to me is, I hope you don't think this is going to lead to any kind of career in the film business. So, that's not why I'm interested in the classes. But, you know, I have a job in television, so I'm really not that interested in career opportunities. I'm more interested in understanding film. And so, you know, fast forward to 2002, when we famously saw the for sale sign under the marquee, and a bunch of us started scheming on how we could stop it from being sold and turned into a grocery store or a restaurant. And, you know, we managed to pull it together.
Yeah, it was called the Showcase Cinemas, I remember, back in the day, yeah, at Speedway and Country Club up there on the north side of the street. Yeah.
It was the Showcase. The Loft had moved there in the early 90s when its location on campus was, you know, basically they turned it into a park. They paved Paradise and turned it into a parking lot. And so the Loft moved to the Showcase in the early 90s. So it had been there about 10 years when we took over.
Right. So a lot has gone on since then. You've done a lot of work on the building. You have developed the programming to be amazing. You have had just an incredible. So tell us a little bit about the facility first, and when we come back after the break, we'll talk about what you're going to be doing in the future and all the good things that are going on. But tell us about what you have now in terms of the facility and the screens that you have and the seating capacity and just the whole venue. What kind of a place is it now, two and a half decades after you started?
Yeah, 22 years in November. Right now we have screen one, which is unaffected by the construction. It's 370 seats. It has a laser projector, which is the newest technology for digital, and also 35 and 70 millimeter film projectors. And that theater is not going to be at all disturbed or involved at all in the construction. We have an upstairs theater we call Screen 2, which now has a 49 seat capacity. because the fire escape is gone, so it only has one ingress and egress, so we can get a cab. And then screen three, which was an auto shop next door, all three theaters are going through construction, but the capacity is reduced again over there.
Right. And
you've got the lobby.
Right, right. And so you have, you know, you're basically the 50th anniversary of the Loft happened in 2022. So what was the genesis of it starting in the first place? And then, of course, you've had it for over about half the time now. You've been in charge. But what was that first 25 years like before you took over?
Well, there was a guy named Lou Scher who owned a bunch of theaters. And one of them was a Loft in Tucson. And he was specialized in pornographic films. And he was quite successful at it. And that's what the Loft was. And his daughter, Nancy Scher, sort of basically, he gave her the Loft to run and let her change it from porn to an art house. So she took the reins with a guy named Bob Campbell, who became kind of a famous film critic. And Nancy and Bob started with the Fellini film and changed it into an art house and, you know, became this beloved. You remember those calendars, or you may, I don't know if you remember them, but I remember those calendars and lots of double features, lots of rep films. It was a true, you know, 60s, 70s style art house back then.
And you've taken it to a new level. You obviously have a lot of programming there, and you debut films. You help with the film festivals in Tucson and Southern Arizona. Actually, you help with film festivals around the world who are screening films here in Tucson. And so you've actually, and obviously you have been very involved in the film industry in Southern Arizona with the Film Commission and so forth. So you've taken an active role in promoting film through the Loft Cinema and being a advocate and a pro advocate for film and production of film in Arizona.
I have. I think that's one of the things Loft, one of our early, you know, visions was to promote Tucson as a film making city, and to support filmmakers as much as we could with providing them a screen to show their film.
Yeah, you know, 50 years ago, Tucson was pretty high into the filmmaking business, and we had so much going on at Old Tucson, but also all around the community. There was just seemed like there was a movie going on every couple of weeks, another one would start. And it's been quite of a long time coming, and hopefully with the new commission and the statewide commission and the Film and Sports Commission, then maybe with all the good work that Shelley before and now Peter at the Film Commission downtown, maybe we can try and bring back some of that. It's those darn tax incentives in those other states that have pulled a lot of people to those other New Mexico in New Orleans and other places. But hopefully our state legislature will kind of see the light of how important filmmaking is in Tucson.
Well, we do have incentives now. So they've just gone into effect recently. And we're hoping that, you know, that they can get increasingly better, and that people will recognize them. And Peter Catalanote at the Tucson Film Office is just doing a magnificent job of getting the word out. And I'm real proud of the work that the film office has been doing. So it's a good, it's a tight community. We all work together.
Right. It's great. And of course, the engagement with the University of Arizona is ongoing with the film industry, as the film and television school is really important to developing young talent and the good things coming out of there. And of course, you and I have been involved in that over many, many years. And we continue to flourish with good student projects coming out of that. Well, when we come back after the break, let's talk a little bit about the future of the Loft Cinema, the next 50 years of what that might look like. And then I might pin you down and ask you about a couple of your favorite movies that either you've seen or that have been put together here in Southern Arizona. And we'll talk about some good things that are coming up. I also want to ask you about the Solar Cinema series and about how that all works. So you're listening to KVOI 1030 The Voice, Tucson's only live local news and talk. We're with Peggy Johnson, the executive director of the Loft Cinema. And you are listening to Jump In Tucson, the Wonder Series, celebrating the good things at the University of Arizona. We'll be back after this break from some of our great sponsors. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. This is Dr. Ed Ackerley. I had the good fortune of being at the University of Arizona and the time when I got to meet Peggy Johnson, who is the executive director of the Loft Cinema. She spent many years working for KUAT as a political reporter. And last two and a half decades, she's been facilitating a wonderful experience at the Loft Cinema at Speedway and Country Club. So this is the Wonder Series. We talk about the good things going on at the U of A. And certainly, Peggy, you emulate some of the good things that have happened through and by and with the University of Arizona over many years. So Peggy, let's talk a little bit about, you know, it's never a dull moment when you're the executive director of a theater. Tell us a little bit about some of the challenges that you've had over the years and even in the last week or two of working with just getting the Loft Cinema to be where you want it to be.
Well, it's been a roller coaster ride, I tell you. From the early days when we didn't have enough money to, I mean, we were just scraping by. I wasn't getting paid, you know. And then we turned the corner around 2006 and started running in the black and have been ever since. And it just has grown and grown and grown. And it's just been such fun to watch the success build. And, you know, even during COVID, which we were closed longer than most, I think, you know, we've bounced back. And it's just been, people have been really generous and really grateful. I think the main public reaction to the Loft that I get personally is gratitude. Just people right. Say, thank you, thank you, thank you.
It's such a warming and welcoming place. You know, not too long ago, we had the observance of John C. Scott's life there in the main auditorium, and so many of his friends who knew John over the last 50 plus years in broadcasting came to talk about him. And it was just so nice to have that event in the Loft. As you say, it is just a very warming, welcoming place, and we'd hate to see anything happen to it. So we're glad that you're there and that things are moving along. So what does the future look like for the Loft? What are your plans? Obviously, there's construction going on, and you have some big plans. But what's your vision for the organization in the next, say, 5 to 10 years?
It's just so exciting. So we finally broke ground. It's been about 7 weeks now. We are building a brand new lobby. If anybody who goes to the Loft knows that our lobby can't handle the crowds that we draw. So we're going to have a huge concession stand, three times as long as the one we have now. Lots more local food and local beers and a bigger wine selection. And it's going to just be amazing. And we're abandoning all the plumbing in that original building. So it's going to have all new restrooms for men and women in the lobby, and a big space, tall ceilings. It's going to be kind of amazing. There'll be an elevator that will take you up to the theater on the second floor, which, as you know, you have to walk up the stairs to get to now, which is not ideal. And was one of the first things I wanted to do when we bought the theater in 2002 was put in an elevator, and it's taken us 22 years, but we're getting it. So there'll be a rooftop bar up on the second floor, and this theater that a lot of people are not crazy about on the second floor will be changed into luxury seating and kind of, I think of it as our first class cabin and fewer seats than it has now. And then there'll be another new screen just north of screen three, which will be about a lot like screen three. It'll be a similar space. So we'll have four screens, and then in between the two buildings, we're going to put a permanent outdoor screen, open air screen. So, which I think is pretty unique.
Yeah, that's great in the fall and the spring to watch the movies outside. It's amazing, and great weather in Tucson. You know, you're not watching movies now during the monsoons, but when the weather is right, it's just perfect to be outside and to watch a great screening of some kind of a film that is unique to the Loft too. It's pretty awesome. So I'm
hoping that we can use that grassy space for, you know, stuff during the day,
right
before. Or I don't know what yet. We haven't totally programmed it, but I'm hoping to make that space available for people to rent and use too.
Yeah. So I said I was going to pin you down and have you tell me what one of your favorite maybe Tucson-made movies or experiences in Tucson that you've had over the last few years in the movie business. What is one that stands out to you that either at the Loft made such a great impact at the Loft or was made in Tucson and debuted there or something that is just unique to Tucson?
Well, you know, we just showed Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, and it's hard to get a better film
than
that.
That's amazing, yes. Yeah, that's a great, great movie.
That Jodie Foster line, you know, that's weird even for Tucson, and Tucson is the weird capital of the world. It's a classic movie. And it's just a sweet, great movie. I that comes to mind because we just showed it this week for Tucson's birthday.
Right, right. That's great. So how can listeners engage with the Loft if maybe they want to talk to you about running it for an event or whether they want to help you in your endeavor of keeping this type of movie experience alive in Tucson and how they can help with the organization? What's the best way for them to get in touch with you and get in touch with the organization?
Well, we have a really dynamic, great website, loftcinema.org. People can communicate, you know, send an email through that. Check out all the plans for the building are there, the ways to give, all of the upcoming films, you know, the whole program. Really the website is the best way to know everything. You can sign up for our emails that we send out twice a week. And, you know, of course, we're all over social media. So,
right. And you've got a great staff working for you there, many who have been there for a long time. Yeah.
A best staff. I think that the people that I work with, my greatest source of joy. I just have a great team.
Yeah, fantastic. So if someone wants to come down and view a movie or know what's coming up, they would go then onto the website and that's how they could see what's coming up. And eventually they're going to be able to have an experience coming into the lobby and they could actually have a good dinner and kind of hang out a little bit before or after a movie as well, right?
Exactly. Yeah, we're going to have a lounge. The existing lobby will be made into a lounge and then the big new lobby. And yeah, we're going to have a lot of local food choices and it's going to be a real world class experience. I think it's going to really, really be an exciting space.
You've had a vision for this for many years, and you've done a great job of curating the types of movies and things that are good for a venue like yours. And you've done a great job of just managing the process and being active in the community and supporting. So thank you for all the good work that you have done to promote cinema and film in Southern Arizona. You've been a real trooper for that, and we appreciate all you've done. And I just have to, again, thank you for the good work you've done to help us at the U of A with students and all the good work that they have done over the years in their filmmaking experience, but also business and other things as well. So my last question to you is, what is the most fulfilling thing about your career in film? What makes Peggy Johnson tick, and what is the thing that it makes just make you complete in your life as the executive director of the Loft and your vision for film in Tucson?
I just have to go back to that gratitude, just knowing how grateful the community is for the space, for the programming, for the experience. It's just knowing how much we mean to people. I think that, and last time I said that in an interview, I went outside and the first thing I happened to me was I ran into somebody who thanked me for the Loft. You know, it's just the gratitude of the community is very fulfilling. I've always been all about local community, so it's great.
Well, thank you, Peggy Johnson, executive director of the Loft Cinema on Speedway, and check out their website and go see a movie and support the Loft. They could use your support. Well, thanks, Peggy, for being with us. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you. And who knows, maybe you'll be live on the air just like Peggy Johnson was today. Jump in Tucson broadcast from Bustos Media Studios in KVOI 1030 AM radio. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you will jump in Tucson.